romantic literature, what does Gothic literature do, you know, for people in the 19th century? Is it distances them from egotistical calculation, right?
There's right, this and maybe world. Maybe we need that more than ever now.
And now we need that, right. Yeah, because like there is a world that's arising around them, which is very confusing to them, much as the world that's arising around us is very confusing to us, where hierarchical bonds, patriarchal bonds, separations of classes are being undermined, not by choices they make, but by modes of production, by
or maybe a new mode of production is asserting itself as a new form of nature or a new natural order. Mm. And there's this tension with a previous conception of nature, or maybe that that's where this the Gothic trope of eternal love comes in. Mm.
Yeah, so like you need to reach towards cosmic or romantic or like archetypal or Byronic, whatever you want to call it. These archetypes that allow you to like separate yourself from this world of accountancy and this world of accumulation and this world of exploitation. Like, and the Brontes, it seems to me, were at a perfect spot to not only separate themselves from that through novels like this and elsewhere, but also to encounter it, right? So like the father encounters the Luddite rebellion and the daughters and son encounter the Chartist movement, right? Like this early working class movement for democracy and freedom and rights, you know? And so maybe in some way, you know, not that she's conscious of it, but Emily Lagasse is like...
I love that you keep calling her that.
Boom.
It's so funny.
Boom. She put spices on it. Boom. There's Elodie Jacaudi's dick. But like, I guess what I'm saying is that there's a way in which maybe the Gothic and the Romantic appeals to us nowadays because so much is drowned in so much of the heavenly ecstasies of modern life are drowned in egotistical calculation
and like, gratification
and gratification in a very shallow and very asexual way. Like our sexuality, our romanticism is gratified in a way that's neither sexual nor romantic.
Right. I mean, there's two things I'll say that, you know, are reflective, I think, of the novel and maybe again the attempt to reach it in the film that maybe doesn't quite get there, but there is this attempt. So there's, you know, like the connection between Catherine and Heathcliff is it fulfills like the three facets of the like platonic system of love, the ideal of Eros, which is erotic love, there's philia, which is friendship, and then there's agape, which is spiritual love, cosmic love. And, you know, traditionally that's like the love of the divine and the love the divine has for you once you accept that. And, you know, that kind of paternalistic, you know, godlike divine figure is absent from Catherine and Heathcliff's relationship, and they provide that for each other. You know, these are things that might be missing from modern life. The other thing is like the concept of the sublime and the romantic sublime, which again this novel I think embodies. And there's like two facets of it. There's the Burkean sublime, which is the notion that you sort of experience things in nature and the world and the cosmic and things that are transhistorical and beyond you, and you in that encounter, you are terrified. Like it sort of reminds you of the vastness of what's beyond you and your own insignificance. And there's a horror that results, but that's there's an authenticity there. There's, you know, that there's a sincerity there. And then the kind of, I think, kinder version of that is the Kantian sublime, where you might have that experience or that encounter, but rather than it being terrifying and absorbing, like and swallows you in the abyss, it reminds you what it means to be human. And there's a kind of joy and freedom in that. So, you know, I think that's why maybe these stories have retained their appeal, none of that really exists. And as you say, like the kind of logic of capitalist accumulation, like there's nothing kind of beyond ourselves and our acquisitiveness and our material relations. And maybe we're not going to reach for the divine for that, but we'll find that in other sources.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, it's like the novel is the primary mode by which like people have, you know, historically learned to be and behave as bourgeois subjects, like, and you right. glean your subjectivity from that. But I guess maybe we're at a moment where it's like, well, what does that mean to be a bourgeois subject now? Like, what do these like trappings, traditional trappings still exist? Like, I don't know. Like, how does that operate now in the logic of like our particular moment at this stage in capital? I don't know.